You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket.
Good morning, cousin.
Oh, good morrow, cousin.
Blessed equinox.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I really love the equinox. We've been just riding those liminal brooms all over the coast the last few days. I feel very, like, settled. I'm waking up on the first day of spring. I feel like I'm reemerging from the ground for sure.
Yeah, same. You know, have been meditating a lot on the myth of Persephone and her return from the underworld in the poetry class I've been teaching. And it has really given me a lot more awareness to be, you know, in weeks of observance of this coming season. And it feels so good. It feels so good to wake up to these weird weather days. I love spring moody weather.
Mm-hmm. When we were driving yesterday, we drove probably a 10-mile span, and in that span was bright, bright, bright sun, and then an entire swath of dark rain clouds that almost made it look like nighttime, and then this clearing and graying of the sky, and it felt like we were driving through veils, because we were, because that's what the season is about.
And this particular land we're on, I mean, the property we're on is covered in ley lines, but this land in general has ley lines all over it. It is known to be worshiping sites for Hecate, you know, kind of at least nearby. This is a really magical place, and I think that it's one of those places where the veil is thin.
Yeah, I particularly notice islands to be very thin places.
I think being close to water is just so magical.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're on an island, you're close to water no matter where you're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're on our last full day of our little retreat, our creation and restoration retreat. And we had asked our patrons if they had any questions for us, and they wrote in with so many. I'm so delighted by how many questions we were sent. And I can't wait to talk to y'all about it.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm curious to see these questions, or hear these questions, rather.
Yeah. So, you know, we know a couple of the questions. I'm going to start with a question that neither of us have read yet.
Okay.
So let's see. This one's a fun one. Emily Flood, one of our patrons, would like to know, what about witchy business rituals?
Witchy business rituals.
Yeah.
Hmm. What do you think? I feel like your brain would be hot on this one.
My brain's always just burning up.
Just cooking.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I've made my business out of my life, so it's kind of intrinsically witchy. One of the things I'll do when I'm going to pull cards for somebody, which, you know, I mean, I know that that is inherently spiritual, but you could do this before any interaction with somebody, especially if you're working over Zoom. I'll light a candle and I'll light some incense. That is a classic ritual for me because it feels like the candle is, okay, we're beginning now. That feels like an initiation to a new moment. And the smoke feels like setting the place with my intention, because I always choose my incense based on something. Sometimes that's just that I like a smell. Sometimes it's that I want to burn something about blessing or clearing or, you know, springtime, for example. So I set my space like that. And I also will, like, anoint my business cards with, like, oils or powders for prosperity and abundance. I'll do warding on things. I often say a blessing about the money that comes into my life, and it's something like, I'm not warmed up for, like, my blessings right now, you know, but it's, may all of the money that comes into my life come from joyous, willing hands. May it only perpetuate the highest good of everyone whose lives it touches. Those are a few that come to mind for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are great, great suggestions. I mean, on my end, to me, I think there's a lot of spiritual potential in how you choose to show up to your job. I like to try to connect to the values of neo-paganism mm-hmm. and more modern witchcraft, which is about showing up authentically and honestly and well-resourced and with a connection to the divine, which, you know, more concretely might look like, you know, making sure that my nervous system is regulated before I like talk with a client, things like that. But I don't think that you necessarily have to only be doing spiritually focused work to bring witchcraft or magic to your workspace. So, you know, for me, it's about how am I showing up? Am I self-aware? Am I, you know, reacting with my coworkers in a way that is disconnecting us instead of connecting us, because being connected is a pagan value to me. So, you know, how can I just show up as my authentic self?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many ways that we can incorporate whatever our view of our witchcraft is. And, you know, if you're as a double earth sign, if you are like me and you're like, what objects can I put in my workspace? And maybe you aren't like me and you need to be a little more subtle about it. Think about, you know, representations of those objects that people aren't necessarily going to see and be like, oh, you're one of those freaks. you know, Amber and I were just talking about like hand tattoos and how one might not want the whole world to see a certain symbol because it's so misunderstood. Those are all valid concerns. So, for example, if you're thinking that you want a cauldron, like a small cauldron in your office where you can burn some things, maybe that looks like a really minimalistic brass bowl instead of a black iron cauldron. Maybe if you want to bring in, you know, themes of spring, it's an art print of some of your favorite flowers that you associate with Persephone. It can be so many things, you know, and that is where the magic of your practice comes in, is your interpretations and how they work for your life. So shall I move on to question number two?
Absolutely. Yes. I want to make sure like we answer all these questions. I want to answer them all. So let's keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next is one of our goddess tier patrons, Carly,
mm-hmm.
has asked, what is the history of the witching hour? Are you familiar with this?
No.
Well, I did see this question beforehand, mm-hmm. and I didn't know the answer, so I did a little research.
Okay, I love that.
The witching hour was first recorded as a phrase in 1793. It was in a poem, but it probably began as a concept in the 1500s, probably around 1535, when the Catholic Church was forbidding any activities from taking place from 3 to 4 a.m. because that was when they, I don't know, thought or observed witches were doing their bidding.
Oh, okay, cool. I like that.
Yeah, and there are also some beliefs that because Jesus was crucified at 3 p.m., the reverse of that would be 3 a.m., and because that crucifixion was holy, the reverse would be unholy, right? And therefore a time for demonic activity. And I guess in some of the older beliefs and the more stringent strains of Christianity, the number three is considered a mockery of the Holy Trinity.
Wow.
It's a really different take on numerology from the pagan perspective.
Yeah, quite. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, where we see things as like, oh, it's related to that, so it's holy.
Oh, and that's better, yeah.
Right.
Whereas they see the relationality of like, oh, it's a problem. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't quite understand that before.
Yeah. Oh, and it says it was considered shameful for a woman to be seen out between the hours of midnight to 4 a.m., which ultimately led priests to tie her to the witch's hour.
Oh, I mean, I fully agree. Women should not be out after 1 a.m. I mean...
Get back in that kitchen.
I'm not about women just walking around whenever they want. You need to go home, please. No, I don't give a shit.
These are jokes.
These are jokes.
Yeah. I mean, I have heard that there's a belief that, like, I think midnight to like 3 a.m. or so mm-hmm. is the time when supernatural activity is the most likely to occur.
That I have heard too, yeah.
And I think it's because that's the time when generally there's a lot less electricity on in the world, and therefore the channels of energy are a little clearer. It's easier to detect those subtle energies.
Oh.
Ooh, can you put an effect on that so my voice goes like wobbly, like echo?
Subtle energy. I can't, but I can put a cool sound effect over it.
Great. It's just going to be like, boy.
Drink every time they say subtle energies.
That's the drinking game. And if you're like me and you don't drink alcohol, I need you to take a shot of water, please.
Please hydrate. All right. Moving on.
Moving on. Thank you, Carly.
Yes, thank you.
We love your support. We love the question. Mm-hmm. Okay. Brew Lachlan would like to know our thoughts on nonverbal practice or tips on being more verbal in small ways that don't feel so overwhelming. So I think this is...
What a good question.
Yeah, I think that this is more of on the psychology side. I did open up the questions to be about anything from witchcraft to therapy to living.
Yeah. Nonverbal. I am not a very verbal witch. I'm a very nonverbal witch. I'm usually doing things in my head. I'm saying things in my head. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's actually necessary to speak things out loud. So to me, it's not a conflict. I mean, even in psychotherapy, I'll sometimes say to someone who's having a big feeling, okay, I want you to notice what emotions are coming up. And you don't have to tell me. I want you to say them to yourself, not even out loud, just note them to yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sufficient. And I also do think that there is a lot of power in speaking things out loud. Absolutely. That's concretization and vibration and energy. And that is important. I haven't found it to always be necessary, especially for a lot of my spellcraft. I realize as I'm continuing on as a magician, I'm much more, not much more, but I'm getting really drawn to chaos magic, which would not really, you don't have to say anything out loud. You can draw a sigil and walk away, you know, or you can just look at what is happening in a room and decide that you can maybe shift some objects around and that's a spell, or, you know, it's just so much more free form, which is way different than folk magic. So I would say if you're feeling drawn to nonverbal practice, please go for it. We're staying in a Buddhist retreat center. They're fairly silent. You know, there's magicians of every kind of culture and form. So that's so cool that you know that about yourself, that that's maybe something that feels better to you.
I am thinking about this question from the autistic standpoint. And I know that for me, sometimes it feels like I'm thinking interpersonally. I'm not even thinking magically right now. And I think that that's still beneficial. For me, my thoughts can get so fast and they can go down so many roads at the same time that I will often describe that as like, I need a second to untangle my thoughts, because it really does feel like they're just getting in a knot, and it can be hard to be verbal in that place. Not because I don't want to be, but because there are just so many things that want to come out of my mouth at the same time, and my tongue is not fast enough. So early on in my marriage, I learned to communicate ahead of time, like, I just need you to let me have a second to be quiet while I get through this thought. And that helped so much, you know, and it took practice, because it's not how we're trained to be social, to like let someone have a pause to think. There's a lot of back and forth, especially if you're in a high emotion conversation. It can feel like someone is stonewalling if they're not able to say like, oh, I need a second, you know? So learning to have that by building that skill over time was helpful. And then I'm also thinking of in our podcast, you know, Amber and I, we both have a lot to say. Can you tell by how much we talk professionally? So one of us will be really excited about something and we'll be telling a story. And in order to make sure that we don't just, you know, monologue for 10 minutes about 16 topics, the other one will hold a finger up to indicate like, ooh, I have a thought. It's not about interrupting. It's about nonverbal communication that, oh, I want to say something right now. And I think that those kinds of like hand signals and even with relationship clients, I suggest having basically safe words for communication that are like, when I say break, what I need is just a few minutes so that I can ground, so we don't have a really explosive conversation. It doesn't mean I don't love you. In fact, it means I love you and I need a moment. So I would say consider what works well for you and then try some things. This could be in relation to other people and communication in general, or it could be in your magical practice. If you want to be more verbal, that's one thing. If you don't want to be, you also don't have to be. You just need to be able to make sure that if another person is involved, that you're letting them in on your process so that they don't feel left out, because communication is so complex.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, you also asked about, you know, minimal verbalizing. And I think that's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Having just a statement that you repeat to yourself, or when in magical practice, you want to concretize with just a word like yes or no or soft or dark or whatever you need. I think that's actually really, really profound. Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Brew. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to go to a question from Sarah Andre. This may be more of a Patreon exclusive suggestion since you're an audio podcast, but an audio visual witchy arts and crafting episode would be so much fun to watch and follow along with.
Yeah, I think that would be super cute. Yeah, I think you're right. That feels like a Patreon. I don't think I couldn't reliably run a YouTube channel. I'm such a busy bitch. but we do have some devices to learn how. Callie, would you like to...
to break the news.
Would you like to break the news?
Yes. So our first full day here, I had this thought, oh my God, what will it take for us to get Mint, as in Mint Fairy, who we've had on the show twice, to get out here? And I sent them a text and I said, what would it take for us to get you here? And they said, oh, you just let me know and I'll figure out a way to be there, you know? And we make money every month on Patreon from you all. And I asked Amber, what if we just paid for a plane ticket for Mint? Because it's cheaper for us to fly somebody out to us than for the two of us to fly somewhere. And we have these places we stay here, you know? It would be so magical, especially, I mean, Mint is the mom of a young kid. Like, I would love to gift our friend a little vacation.
Absolutely.
And Amber was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And I asked Mint. And Mint was like, I want to bring my bestie, Amy, and I'll pay for her way. And hell yeah. So we booked tickets and Mint will be joining us for a few days for Beltane and is going to teach us how to edit videos so I can post some on YouTube. Because that is going to be a me project, because Amber has plenty going on in her life. And technically... really, honestly, so do I.
Yes. I was going to say, we both do.
It's going to be a chill aspect of this.
Yeah.
I do want to make some Patreon content, especially. Mm-hmm. And I would like to figure out some ways to bring our show to Patreon that are really easy and accessible. So we are working on that. I'm so excited about it. I think it's going to be really magical, and I appreciate you giving us an opportunity to share that news with you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you, Sarah.
I am so excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be super cute.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good time. Savannah A. would like to know tips on using spiritualism and witchcraft to break toxic behavioral cycles and thought patterns.
Yeah. I think that spirituality and witchcraft is uniquely capable of helping you do things like that, because self-reflection is a really big part of it. You know, journaling prompts, like we just did a full moon ritual with Mandy Yates Garcia the other night. It was so great. Super highly recommend you go to her rituals. They're fantastic. And in the ritual, there was like three different journaling prompts to look at, you know, what you're letting go of. And often we start to... you know, when we like self-reflect about what we want to let go of, we're like, oh yeah, I have this thing where I like don't want to get up in the morning and that's like really bad for me. Or, oh, I'm stuck in this relationship that isn't really working for me. Or, you know, insert whatever difficult cycle you're in. And then there's a lot of tools in witchcraft and magic for you to try to like really intentionally break those cycles. This whole thing is all about setting intentions. So you could just like put one of your cycles in that intention and work on it through magic. You could do that. You could also hire a guide or a helper to support you on that path, because I don't think it's light work to do breaking and cord cutting and banishing and all of that. It's a lot of energy.
Well, and when we're talking about behaviors, we're often also talking about interpersonal stuff and patterns. Again, like thought patterns are often in relation to relationships, right? And we don't heal solely by ourselves.
No, we don't heal alone, that's for sure. And also, we do and we don't, right? We do different healing alone and different healing in relationship for sure. But complete healing, I think at least, includes relationality.
I agree. And I would say to break toxic behavioral cycles and thought patterns, the first thing that I think of is pretty simple. And I'm going to get a little deeper with it in just a moment. First thing is come up with the affirmation that you want to be working with. You know, really identify what the desire around change is. Where is that coming from? Really investigate it and get exceptionally clear on what it is you're trying to let go of and what you're trying to call in, and create one concrete statement about that. And then, so that's the like beginner level. The intermediate / I don't know, master level is involve that in some kind of embodied practice, like sex magic. If you want to learn about that, listen to our sex magic episode with Sophie St. Thomas. And basically, you're going to conjure emotions and chemicals in your body that get you to a heightened state. And what that does is it makes your brain a little more gooey and easier to work with. You're working with neuroplasticity. And when you're in that space, I want you to say those affirmations, because that is a spell. And it's also physical work that you're doing to change those thought patterns. Of course, that has to be followed with action. Because if we're only doing things in theory and we're not changing our actions, then we're not truly making change in accordance with our will, right? Which is magic. So I would say do some spell work around that. Do some embodiment around it. And then when you're in those moments where you observe yourself getting to that place, whenever you notice it, which is hard, it's hard to learn how to see our triggers coming up. But when you notice them, say, oh, okay, why is this coming up for me? What is this pushing on? What could be more helpful to me in this moment? It's not about shaming yourself. It's about seeing what will actually get you what you need there.
And if the voice of shame is too loud, that's where I think a skilled helper is a very safe idea.
Absolutely.
I worry about people trying to break really, really difficult childhood embedded patterns on their own with spells. Like I mean, I'm not saying don't do that. Yes, please do that. And also, you could call in a voice of shame that could push you into a depressive episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you be gentle with yourself, gentle enough to let someone else hold you while you do this kind of work? And just, you know, go slowly. That way you don't dysregulate yourself heavily. You know, I'm going to break all ties to the shame of my sexual abuse. Okay. All right. Yeah. You know, there's going to probably be a multiple anchor points to take care of you in that process. Yeah. If you're like, I want to drink some more water because I'm always a dehydrated, dry bitch, you know, that's sure, do a spell, drink some water, set a goal, fine. You know, it depends on what you mean by toxic.
Right.
You know, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, if you're looking at stuff that you know is big, or you're not sure, if you have an inkling that it might be more serious than you're giving yourself credit for, consult with a trusted expert, you know, and let their voice guide you. Even if your therapist is not necessarily witchy, you do still need non-magical support for these things.
Yeah. And maybe we'll eventually get a question about how to find a witchy therapist. I know people ask us that, and I'm not going to answer that here. But I will say, just very briefly, I believe any therapist worth a good damn will roll with your belief system. Mm-hmm. Everybody has belief systems. Spirituality mm-hmm. is just one kind. Mm-hmm. People ask me all the time, like, how do you integrate that? And I'm like, how don't you integrate that into your practice? Where you're like, oh, I'm not gonna touch that belief system, but your belief system around relationships or self-care or whatever, that's mm-hmm. fine. Anyway, mm-hmm. ooh, I'm going on a tangent. I'm all hot.
She's getting so spicy.
Ooh, I'm just like burning up. All right, anyway, we should wrap up this question, but it's a really good question.
Yeah, thank you, Savannah. It is a good question. And this was actually our highest voted question. I asked folks to like the questions that they wanted answered the most.
Nice.
So this is clearly something that everybody's thinking about a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, not to plug myself, but I'm gonna reach out to me.
Yeah.
CallieLittle.com or Gosh Callie on Instagram, because I do that. I help people with the things they want help with. And we can absolutely bring a witchy lens to that.
Don't at me, though. Leave me alone right now.
Amber's full. I'm not full.
I'm really full. But I am opening up my practice again in the fall. So you can't. I'm just being cute. But yeah, I think that you would get on Callie's books much quicker.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? Work with both of us.
I mean, dynamic duo.
Ooh. Carly Williams says, Jungian psychology and its relation to witchcraft would be cool. And I second the audio visual bonus content with spellcraft. We got you. Jungian psychology and its relation to witchcraft. I mean, God, what episode don't we talk about that?
Right. I mean, Jung comes up all the time because I'm a Jungian. And we will do a proper episode. I don't want to go too deep into that here because we're going to do a whole episode. But you're right. You're completely right. Mm-hmm. How doesn't it relate? Yeah. There's even whole forms of Jungian-based witchcraft. We'll bring that in.
Yeah.
I looked that up once. I was like, is there just Jungian witches? Of course there is.
Yeah.
And so I can just be in league with them. But yeah, mm-hmm. very, very stoked to talk about that.
Yeah. Ooh, yesterday when we were in that antique mall, mm-hmm. there was an antique book called Hypnosis, A Jungian Perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it's really more appropriate to say that Jung borrowed from shamanism and cross-cultural mm-hmm. magical practices and not folk magic of yesteryear, but... Ah, God. Yeah. Oof. I'm already going
into
this. I'm reining myself in. They inform each other. It depends on what you mean by witchcraft, right? What phase of witchcraft. But
yeah.
Anyway, great one. Yes. Yeah. We'll get to it.
We will. And I love Carly. I love knowing that you're also juiced for the Jungian episode that will come. I mean, we call him dad, you know?
One of my more functional attachment figures.
The dead ones work really well.
He's always around. Yeah, it's great. Never leaves, and but he's always gone.
They can't harm you when they're dead, you know?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It got dark for a second.
Oh, here we go. I'm spiraling.
All right. And the next question is from Emily Marie. What are your thoughts on banishing spells like for actual people?
Oh, those are called boundaries, and you can do that anytime you want. It's not...
Ooh, I love that.
That's a good question, yeah.
It is a good question. Yeah, I think that banishing gets confused with, like, hexing.
Mm-hmm, good point. Yep.
Yeah, that's not it. We're not saying it's a curse on somebody. Banishing is, oh, you are not coming into my life anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you can banish, you know, spirits from your house, right? You can banish negative energies and things like that. It doesn't mean that you're like, fuck you. It's not about that.
No, I mean, that is a banishing ritual. You can do that. You can burn a bridge. You can do that. I'm sure you already have in your life. I certainly have.
You can blend a banishment with a curse for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And... I mean, I really love that you said those are called boundaries, because that is what they can be sometimes, you know. Boundaries can be a really gentle thing, like me and you being like, ooh, we both need alone time in the forest today.
Yeah.
That's a boundary. That's not a negative thing.
No, no. I mean, your boundaries are information about you. And yes, others will feel some kind of way about them, and... I really do. I think the most potent banishing spell you can do is to speak your needs out loud or to yourself or communicate them to the person with which you want to set the boundary mm-hmm. and do that mm-hmm. and banish bullshit that doesn't need to be there between you and other people. Mm-hmm. This is also just my personal perspective that there's just like infinite people in this world. And I don't think that anyone is a throwaway people, but.
But some relationships aren't meant to stay.
Not really. I feel like mm-hmm. most aren't. I really noticed that at least in my life, most relationships have catalyzed a process or a change, or I have done that for someone else. Mm-hmm. And the people that have stayed for longer cycles are much fewer.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that means anything about me or them or anything. I think that mm-hmm. that's the nature of relationships, at least
yeah.
the way that we do them here.
Something I say in my practice a lot is, you know, consider everyone you've known in your life. Mm-hmm. 99% of your relationships are not going to last till your death. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That doesn't mean that they're without value or that we should avoid connection. We pay the cost of the gift of connection with loss, you know, mm-hmm. it is part of the human experience, and the desire to avoid that is also very human. It's just impossible, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
I will also say, if you want to be doing some magic specifically around this, I mean, look into boundary magic. We had an episode, I think, called Boundaries Are Magic. So I would listen to that. And I would also say, like, sit at your altar or your bed or wherever, go to the forest and sit with a nice black stone of your choice. Let it absorb those feelings for you, because that is a visualization ritual. That's concretizing something within yourself using a physical object. You know, you can do cord cutting rituals. I also think that, you know, ghosting has its place. Like, there are abusive relationships where the best thing you can do is just not engage with somebody.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of the time, it's avoidable. It can harm you as a relational being by creating an avoidant pattern. Mm-hmm. And it can certainly harm other people, especially if they aren't deserving of that kind of confusion and trauma.
Yeah.
So consider how you want to move through banishing somebody in your life. What could honor that relationship, because I think that's a really great way to get closure also. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're banishing, you're pushing something out. So that means that there's a hole. Are you going to, you know, close that up, fill it? Think about the space that's left and what you want that space to be.
Beautiful. Yes. Mm.
Thank you, Emily. I hope that that is how I say your name. Let me know if it's not, because I would like to say it correctly. We thank you in some episodes and bring you up sometimes. So mm-hmm. the next question is from Jasmine. Would love looking at different therapeutic frames such as IFS, DBT, etc., with a witchy bent.
Yeah, we are planning. We had a whole list of stuff we were going to record this weekend, and then we're just moving more intuitively with our subtle energies as we're here. but yes, I think I've mentioned this on the pod a few times. I would like to make a different therapeutic models episode, or just, you know, how to find what you're looking for. I mean, with the witchy bent, that is about how you work those skills into your life, or how you choose a therapist to support you working those skills into your life. Like, I find internal family systems to be inherently witchy, because it's related to Jungian psychology, and that is inherently witchy if you understand it to be that way. You know, in IFS, you can sort of anthropomorphize your different internal parts, and what's to say that they're not witchy looking, or they're forest creatures? Well, mine definitely are. Mine aren't just like other people who look like me, you know, they're mm-hmm. all like a whole big cast of characters. Or dialectical behavioral therapy, things like check the facts, which is one of the skills in DBT. Very simply observing just what's around you, what's true. Am I safe and resourced right now? Yeah, okay, I am. How am I safe and resourced? Oh, I feel warm. I feel fed. You know, it's this like grounding work, which is required before you do, not required, but is helpful before you do spells.
So what that sounds like to me, you know, I don't work with all of the acronyms.
The models and interventions.
Yeah, I don't put letters in my work. It sounds like feeling your intuition and then checking your senses to affirm that.
Yeah, kind of. It's like noticing objective facts because your nervous system is sending you distress signals. Mm. And that works for some people. Check the facts doesn't work so much for me, but some people really like DBT. DBT is also like very much in distraction, like putting a rubber band on your wrist and flicking it when you're feeling really hyper aroused, for instance. That's a DBT thing. Mm. Yeah.
Unrelated to this question, but related to that.
Yeah.
Would you do that to literally distract yourself or to punish yourself? Because to me, distract. It sounds like punishment.
To distract. So that can be nice sensory feedback for someone who's really dysregulated.
Okay.
So DBT is particularly effective with people who, here's an activation warning, trigger warning, you guys. But DBT was made for people who are suicidal or who are cutting. Mm. So there can be this really big desire for like a sharp feeling, like digging your nails into your skin. Like I see that with a lot of trauma survivors is there's this need for like a sharp sensory feedback and the rubber band is kind of satisfying that. Or there can be different like objects people can wear that have the sensation of skin and they can push into that or, you know, just kind of ride that pain edge and that can help soothe a system. I mean, to me, DBT, again, I'm not going to go too far into it because I'm not a DBT therapist. It's really about helping people who are not safe in their bodies, who are at pretty high risk for being hurt, to help them learn some self-soothing and distracting techniques. I'm a depth therapist, and that's very different.
Right. It sounds like DBT is kind of addressing the fruiting body, where you tend to work with people's mycelium.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, like highly active symptoms are actually not appropriate in my scope.
Yeah.
Because I don't do crisis work.
Same. You know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a college educated professional. I'm a life educated professional. And when folks are in that state, I just personally don't have the skill set to guarantee their safety. And so when I get proposals from clients who are experiencing those symptoms, I tend to tell them, you know, I would love to work with you once you have been with a therapist specializing in that for a while. If they're incapable of finding that right away and they need support in finding that, I can help them as my work find that, but I can't address that work because it is really big. This is all, we're just like getting off on DBT.
We're on a tangent about all that stuff. I mean, yeah, I feel you. So I believe you can bring your spirituality to any kind of therapeutic model. All therapeutic models, from my perspective, is just different frameworks, different spells, different kinds of magic. Mm-hmm. So you can bring yourself to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, if in an episode we notice something that would make sense to bring up about, like, you can see this in internal family systems or DBT,
yeah,
X, Y, and Z, you know, we'll mention that. It is good to know that that's a curiosity of yours, Jasmine. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So moving on from that super light tangent that we just went on, we have another question from our other goddess tier patron.
Fantastic.
Harley.
Yes.
Who says, I've been suffering so badly from imposter syndrome and was curious on tips and tricks to work past it.
What do you think?
Okay. I say this with love, and I think I'm going to sound a little bit like mom right now. So just know that this is with love, and I do understand. I personally do not believe in imposter syndrome.
That's funny. Neither do I.
So similar to like...
There's something underneath it.
Yes.
We're not saying that the feeling is invalid, but the syndrome... Yes. I don't know how helpful that container is. I don't think it's helping anyone move past whatever feeling is underneath it.
I believe that imposter syndrome is the exact same thing as writer's block, which I believe is an imaginary problem that masks the real problem or challenge, really, because it's not actually a problem. So I think that when we're viewing our work, whether that's professional or creative, maybe it's both, when we're viewing it as able to succeed or fail, then that's a really intense dichotomy to be working in. I don't think you can fail unless you just don't do it. So if you're not doing it, that's the failure.
It feels to me like when anyone says imposter syndrome, which I've said before too, I mean, I have felt right. that, or when I heard about that concept, I was like, oh yeah, I know how that feels. But as I go forward in life, I'm like, oh, aren't we talking about shame
yeah.
or self-esteem
yeah.
or self-efficacy mm-hmm. or jealousy or, mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much underneath it. And imposter syndrome, you know, it's not a diagnosis. It's just like a whole collection of different feelings that create something that's kind of like a syndrome, which is what a syndrome right. is a collection of different behaviors or feelings all mixed together.
Right. This is a complex.
Right.
And that's not, again, like this is not a bad thing. Your feelings are valid.
Mm-hmm.
But where is this feeling that you are a fake that everybody's going to find out? Where's that coming from? Because unless you are an uneducated person in an operating room, I bet you the stakes are not high.
Mm-hmm. And if they feel high, I wonder what that's about. What's going on? There's usually something, many somethings around any sort of anything. What a vague thing to say, Amber. But, you know, like, you know, you're feeling the sense of I'm not good enough to do my job, let's say, or some other people are doing my job better. Other witches on the internet are better at witchcraft. How dare I be a witch on the internet? Who the fuck am I? I don't know anything. I haven't gone to witch school. You know, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. What conditions could be informing that emotional state? Where am I at in my life? Where am I at in my relationships? Where am I at in the cycles of my life? Am I overall feeling drained and exhausted? That casts a shadow on anything you're doing.
Yeah.
How well resourced are you at this moment?
Yeah.
Where are your internal resources? Are you getting what you need in your life? Why don't like direct some energy in that, mm-hmm. in that way, you know, see what's happening there and notice if that feeling of imposter changes.
I think also imposter syndrome is internalized capitalism. You know,
yeah,
which we all suffer from. We are in a world that does not allow us to not be capitalistic.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, that saying there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, that is true. And there are more and less harmful ways to interact
right,
with
there's
it.
Harm reduction.
Exactly. And that's so valid. So I guess I'm going to use an example from my own life. Okay. Imposter syndrome. I, in November, began learning how to tattoo, right? And I don't know if y'all are aware, but the tattoo community historically has been exceptionally exclusive. You know, that whole viewpoint that like tattoo artists are like these rock star, like cool people. And you have to go work as an apprentice at a tattoo shop where you sweep the floor and you don't get paid and you just show up because you love it so much. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. And I don't have to do that. I am friends with tattoo artists and got curious. And one of them said, you should tattoo me. And I did. And she said, wow, you're really good at this. And I was like, oh, I am. I'm going to get my bloodborne pathogen certificate so I can do this a little more ethically. And then I'm going to practice. And I shared about that on my Instagram. And, you know, I had a couple people get really mad that I would share anything about that as somebody who is new to it. And I wasn't sharing like, this is how you tattoo. I was saying, I'm getting into tattooing. I'm so excited to tell you about what I'm learning. And I think a younger version of myself would have felt so called out, like, oh, you're right. I'm not a professional. I shouldn't talk about this. How dare I have the audacity to try something new? But you know what? Those people who got mad at me, those tattoo artists, they were beginners once.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to bet my whole fucking life that they did tattoos out of garages and they gave shitty tattoos and they blew out some lines, you know? But there's this idea that once we're masters of something or even just experienced in something, we get to be gatekeepers. And I think that when you break down the concept of gatekeeping within yourself and you're no longer attempting to gatekeep, you're gonna feel that sense that others are doing that to you a lot less as well. You know, it's kind of like when you're afraid that you're ugly or you're too fat or whatever. When you stop viewing other people as ugly or their bodies as being wrong, you're nowhere near as hard on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great example for sure. You know, and some gates need to be kept. I don't want people, you know, sketching dirty needles into my daughter's arm and being like, Aunt Callie said I can tattoo. I'm like, no, can you please learn how to sanitize, you know?
Absolutely.
Or like, you know what? I'm going to perform the surgery because I just feel like I could. I think I could. It's like, no, don't do that. I mean, that doesn't mean that there's no boundaries in this world or there's no ethical or safety boundaries. Just that, you know, like when I was in the circus, people would beef with me because I called myself an artist. To me, that's gatekeeping. It was like, why can't I call myself a circus artist? Well, because you haven't earned that. A circus artist is someone who was trained for at least 10 years. Your fat ass can't walk on the stage and just get up on that and do that. Mm-hmm. You're not an artist. It's like, who am I hurting exactly? Right. Why does this gate need to be kept for your ego? Like to me, gatekeeping is an ego-based sort of place to live. And if you've listened to the pod enough, you know that I don't advocate for an egoless life. That's not possible. Can you have a healthy ego where someone can call themselves an artist in the same space with you and that doesn't degrade your experience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
You know who who's an artist is... every fucking kid, because they make things from their desire. They just want to make shit, so they do it. And that is the spirit of creativity. If you are a being engaging with the spirit of creativity, you are an artist. And while, yes, it is so important to observe the scope of whatever your practice is and honor the boundaries that are necessary, like with tattooing, I need to be safe. So what did I do? I got my certificate in bloodborne pathogens, right? I get to learn and you get to learn, you know, view everything in your practice, whether it's your business or your art or both, as an experiment. You're learning from it. You are not bound to your current career or even life. You get to change it tomorrow if you decide to. So just learn from it. Show up. Try it. If you make something shitty, if your sale fails, or if you make a really ugly piece of art, do a new sale next month and try pricing things differently. Or paint over the canvas that you fucked up. Or keep painting until it resembles something that you like more. And maybe you'll discover your artistic style. You know, there really is no failure if you're learning from it. I feel so passionate about this topic.
I can tell.
Thank you, Harley, for bringing up something I love to talk about because I really believe in you. I really believe that any of us can do the things that we're excited about. So I appreciate you bringing that up because I know you're not the only one feeling it. Absolutely. We have two more things. First is just a quick comment from Emily Marie again. I would love to hear Jessica Lagnato as a guest on your podcast, but I'm sure you've already thought of this.
Yeah, so would we. I mean, I don't know.
Yep.
I mean, okay, yeah, we did get Amanda Yates Garcia, which I feel like is fairly impressive for like a new podcast. And I think that Jessica and Amanda have pretty different personality types. Not that I find Jessica Lagnato to be unapproachable. I kind of do. I find her a little bit more unapproachable. I don't know why. Maybe because I don't interact with her in online spaces, but I do interact with Amanda in online spaces before we even had her as a guest. So I think that's just a personal edge. But Jessica Lagnato is super fucking popular. Like, you send her a message, tell her to get on here.
Yes. Hey, you know what? That's a great call. If y'all want to hear her on our podcast or anybody, start tagging us in their posts and say, you know what? I would love to hear you on the Pocket Coven podcast.
Send a whole flock of crows.
Please.
All of our patrons petition. Excuse me.
You know, this is the second person that recommended Jessica Lagnato as a podcast guest. We would love to have her. And we also had somebody in our DMs recently say, you know who I would love to hear as a guest on your show is Stevie Nicks. And I was so honored that you think we're cool enough to get Grandmother Witch.
We aren't. I'm going to tell you that right now. We are not Stevie Nicks level. But I, again, like Kelly said, I love that you think that we are.
I mean, and maybe, Amber, maybe that's imposter syndrome. Maybe that's what it is.
No, I don't think so. That's Stevie Nicks. I'm not stupid.
That's
Stevie
legend.
Nicks. It's a legend.
Worldwide icon level.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll try. We'll see what we can try. But
I mean, we are staying at the Dalai Lama's house right now.
Right.
So who knows?
You know, one of his many houses.
One of his many houses. He's a lot of houses.
I'll slide into Stevie's DMs and just see if it gets anywhere. It probably won't. But you know what? I love that vote of confidence. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we're aiming to get some great guests on soon.
We are.
Yeah. So final question. What a fun one. Mm-hmm. I mean, or traumatic, I guess, depending on the person. You know, it tends to go that way.
Yeah.
Sammy Morelli would like to know how to find community without accidentally joining a cult. Ha ha ha. That's what it says.
Nervous laugh.
It's a great question.
It is. Our New Age Bullshit episode goes into some features of cult-like thinking, so look out for that. You know, I think there's just a nice list on the internet of what to look for. I think generally noticing how you feel and honoring how you feel in community, I think cult of personality is also just a thing too.
Yeah.
Rather they're explicitly like, we're enrolling for our new cult. Here's your outfit, you know? But there's just, cult-like thinking in any community space.
Absolutely. I absolutely understand the question here because as an adult, it is hard to find community. We don't have the built-in container of a whole school of people our age going through similar things in their life, you know, we start to branch off and we also do things out of survival. So we work at a place, maybe surrounded by people who aren't necessarily of our same generation or lifestyle or belief system. And those can absolutely lead to fantastic relationships. But when we're talking about finding a group that we belong to, whether they know each other or not, it is hard and it does take time. I think of when I've relocated. I always tell folks that it takes at least 2 years to build some kind of community in your new town. Mm-hmm. And so you really want to be gentle with yourself. You want to make sure that you have resources for that. You know, have a therapist and or friends who you can call. I mean, ideally both, you have both. But have friends who you can call and spend time with. And for those of us who can't really, you know, get out and leave the house, especially because of immunocompromisation in a global pandemic, don't forget that the internet is incredible at connecting people. That's how Amber and I met, is the internet.
Yeah.
We knew each other for years on Tumblr before we ever met. Mm-hmm. And I also met my spouse on the internet.
Yeah.
I met my housemates on the internet.
Yeah, I would say that, a lot of the people in my life now I met online or I met in community spaces. Mm-hmm. Like I have such a funny mix of community in my life, from friends I met on LiveJournal, Tumblr, circus community, like all these just ragtag people that I keep around. But I don't know, that also, you know, because you're asking about cult-like thinking and now we're just kind of talking about friends and stuff like that. But I mean, that's part of it. Do you feel safe with the people that you're in community with? And also being in community is not about feeling safe all the time necessarily.
Yeah.
I can say if you're not being taken advantage of, if your voice is being honored, if your autonomy is being honored, if you can say no, I really think that is a big difference between a cult-like vibe and a not cult-like vibe. You should be able to walk away at any time and set a boundary. You should be able to ask for what you need. You should be able to speak out and say, I don't like that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't feel good to me. Nobody should be manipulating you into accepting or loving something that is just not for you.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of space in that for that in community.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that what community is? Isn't that the difference between a cult and a community? Mm-hmm. Is that a community is interdependent and a cult asks you to be dependent on a leader or an idea. And they will ask you to do things that feel outside of your scope in order to maintain devotion to that leader or that ideal.
Yes.
I saw that in nonprofit.
I mean, we see it everywhere from the LuLaRoe Facebook groups to we're family at work parties. You know, it is really pervasive, that false sense of community. But I mean, you find community by trying to find community, by placing the intention. So, I mean, maybe you can do some spell work around that too. Do some attraction spells, not for physical and sexual attraction, but for spiritual attraction, for interpersonal resonance. And again, as we always say, you know, do that spell work and then go apply it into action. So I feel so inspired with a really fucking cool idea right now.
Yeah, lay it on me.
I am going to expand our Patreon to include a service for witch personals.
Oh.
Amber's looking at me like, what does that mean?
I don't. Okay.
So what I mean.
What are you talking about?
What I mean is I'm going to invite patrons to send us a DM with a short block of text. I will give you a word count in a Patreon post. And you can make a call for other witches that, if it's, you know, appropriate, I will post that as an Instagram post, calling other witches to connect with you and giving them a way to find you. It is going to be a Patreon-only service. And I just want to encourage you finding the right community. Results not guaranteed, but you know what? We will be active in your spell work.
Callie will be active in your spell work.
That's right. Amber does not manage the Patreon.
I don't.
I manage the Patreon, and I am offering this to you from my own time because I think it's a really fun idea, and I would love to encourage you connecting. And this is something that feels easy for me to honor.
Totally. And I will support this endeavor by continuing to feed Callie potatoes and coffee and telling her she's pretty and taking us for a drive to the beach.
Perfect.
That's how I resource the work that Callie does on our Patreon, which I very much appreciate.
And I do our Patreon and our social media to support the work that you do on our audio engineering.
Thank you, love. See, look at that beautiful reciprocity and boundary setting. In real time.
Interdependence. So we didn't talk about what our bonus content would be today, but I have a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I propose that our bonus content is that we each ask the other some questions.
Let's do it.
All right. So if you would like to hear us interview each other about, we don't know what yet.
Yeah. We're just going to improv.
Yep. We're going to interview each other and you can find us on Patreon. This episode will have its bonus content available to all levels. Typically, the bonus content is for the witch tier and above, but this is going to be our all-level access episode. So that means that $2 and up will get you all of our previous extended content that is for that level. But the witch tier and above, you will get over 60 pieces of bonus content. And then the book club tier, which is going to be renamed soon, will access even more, plus our super secret extra bonus podcast, Self as Myth.
Yes, fantastic.
You can also support the pod just by leaving us a rating and review. I know we say it every time, but...
Yeah, and because we're batch recording, I don't have any new reviews. But if you leave some by tomorrow, maybe I could click one in or something. But we will read new reviews as they come out.
Yes, they really make a difference to, honestly, our spirits. And they help the algorithm. They help people see that our podcast is worth listening to. So if you believe in our work, it would mean a ton to us. Just leave us a couple nice words. And we hope to see you around. May this beautiful spring season treat you kindly. May you find all the community that you want and deserve. And may those toxic patterns and relationships get the fuck out of your life.
Yeah.
Boom. As above, so below. We'll see you on Patreon.
Yes.
We'll be right back.